Welcome to Passionate and Practical, the art of dreaming, doing, and serving. I'm your host, Lexi, and I am here with Rebecca Salstrand, who happens to be my housemate for this season of life, and I am so pumped to have her on the show. My first episode of the year was all about three things and three ways that you can tackle your new year. It had a lot to do with habits and writing things down, and I cannot think of a better person to help you start off your new year than Rebecca. She is extremely disciplined, but usually when you hear that word, you don't think of fun, and Rebecca is extremely fun, very lighthearted and joyful, but she is driven and going places. In fact, Rebecca took a bike ride, not just one, but several, along a 70-plus day journey from the East Coast of the United States to the West Coast of the United States. And that's not all. She did this with a group of people, and when they would stop, they would help build houses for Habitat for Humanity. So if you want to listen to the words of anybody's habits and daily routines and the way they structure their life, it's this girl, because she is just so full of inspiration, so full of depth, but also so full of grace in the way that she loves on others, and she never has unrealistic expectations for others just because she lives her life this way. In fact, I think because she is so driven and motivated, it has given her just a wonderful just zeal for life that just exuberates grace. I think that's the way that you say that word. Every episode, I think I mess up either a quote or a word, and I'm like, do I even know how to speak English? But anyways, Rebecca is phenomenal, and I'm so excited for you to hear from her today. So Rebecca, thanks so much for being on the show today.
This is so fun that we get to do this, Lex, especially because we live together and basically see each other's habits like all day, every day. And so it's fun that we get to have a conversation about it.
Yeah. And you're so, like, thank God it's 2019, because 2018 was not the best for habits for Lexi. So I'm glad she's turned up.
You're killing it this year already.
Thank you. Thank you. We're 9 days in, and truly it's been incredible for me. I've just put four things on my, I think, checklist for every day, and it's to brush my teeth before 9. I'm a mom, so if you're not a mom, you don't understand. If you're a mom, you do. Make my bed, get in my prayer journal, and just spend time with the Lord. And then the other one is, I forget. But anyways, I have these things, and I've been killing it for the past 9 days. So next month, I'm going to tackle even bigger things. So anyways, I've been really just in awe of the way that you live life. So it partially has to do with just watching you do life. And so let's just dive right in. Tell me about what you are passionate about.
This is a well-timed question, because we were just having a retreat last weekend. For everybody listening, Lexi hosted this awesome retreat for a lot of the girls in the area that she is friends with and that she mentors. And we talked about developing a passion statement, or a purpose statement, I guess it was. And I've never gone through that process before. So it was really enlightening, and something that I never really tried to put words to. But what we came away with was that I'm passionate about serving people by liberating greatness, was the phrase that we came up with. And that is so true, because how I was phrasing it before was that I am passionate about helping people do impossible things, whether that be a patient who doesn't think that they can ever return to a prior level of function, whether it's a student who doesn't think that they can get through a program or pay off loans or something like that, or just some physical challenge that somebody wants to try, like biking a really long way or something. So I love empowering people and teaching them and just making them, or helping them, believe that they can do something and tackle something on their own. So I think that sums it up pretty well.
Oh, I love it. And if you didn't pick up on that, when she is talking about patients, she's talking about physical therapy. She is in her second out of third year of physical therapy. So watch out, May of 2020, because Rebecca is coming for you.
Can't come soon enough.
Yeah. I watched her and my sister-in-law both live here right now, and I watch both of them in school, and I often, it's probably not the most encouraging thing to say, but I'm just like, I'm so glad I'm not you, man. And then they probably look at me with a pooping, crying baby and say the same thing. So I mean, we just got to own where we're at in life, and I love the season I'm in, and I think they love that there is a light at the end of the tunnel with their
season. That was a very kind way to put it. Yeah,
yeah, maybe. So moving on. So we're talking about PT school. What's your favorite thing about it? And how has your approach to being debt-free in school different than maybe some of your student body and classmates?
What I love about PT is that I get to spend all day learning about the movement system and how it affects people's lives. And I mean, every day you wake up and you climb out of bed and you have to lift your leg to pull on your pants. You have to lift your arm to pull on your shirt. You have to bend down and get all the way to the floor to pick up Bear, your son, and hold him up. And you have to have strength and endurance to hold him, you know, right on your hip for half the day. And that would be a really tough life or a really difficult life to navigate if you didn't have the ability to do those things. And so even in just a small day-to-day way, movement is so important to you, but we often don't think about it until it's taken away from us. So I love being able to study the intricacies of movement and hopefully I'll be good one day at figuring out how to help people recover from something or get better at something. So that's what I love about PT. Now you asked about my journey with paying for school. That has been a journey. I decided to go for it and try to pay cash for grad school. That was a really pivotal decision in my life, I think. Not because I knew exactly how it was going to happen. I just kind of made the decision. And I think that was the best thing I could have done. Not plan for 3 years in advance. You know, my program's 3 years long, and I don't think that, you know, having an exact plan from day one was the answer, but making the decision to go for it and believing that I could do it was what set me off. And from then, it was like this village came around. It was like opportunities started coming out of the woodworks. I've worked 4 different part-time jobs since I've started school. I took a year off in between undergrad and grad school to save money and worked several jobs then. And all of those have been opportunities that have kind of come from people that I've known. Opportunities to live with people like you guys have come up just from kind of people knowing my journey, from me being vocal about it. And so it's been amazing to see how it was kind of a decision. And then it was like a village just pouring grace all over me. That's kind of where I've been in the last year and a half. And it's been a really long, but really, really fruitful journey. And it's been awesome.
That is awesome. The two things that came to mind when you were talking is I didn't think of the liberating greatness in context of your PT journey, and just thinking about someone who has some kind of physical ailment being able to then maybe walk again, or maybe to use their shoulder again the way that they never thought they would be able to. That is liberating greatness. And that's just, oh, I just got so fired up thinking about that. But also, I have this philosophy. I'm a big believer in self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you say it and you write it down and you make active steps towards something, I think that God comes along the way and he just holds your hand and sometimes picks you up and runs with you. And that's kind of the mirror of your story. And I've seen it in my own life. When I've decided to make a change and invite God into that story, I've just seen the blessings multiply. I see it with generosity. Excuse me. I see it with financial people trying to tackle debt. We have another story on the podcast of a friend who was 33 and debt free. She wanted to be debt free by her 33rd birthday. And it's a great story also of just God kind of coming alongside her and just moving her in this way that people love to join these kind of stories.
Yeah, I mean, they really do.
Just knowing that you're making a direct effort to pay for grad school with cash. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. You're like, wow, that is a person I want to get behind. And this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I even say that about people that are in the mission field. And this is not for everyone, but I have actually had meetings with I had a meeting with a friend that was pitching to me that he wanted to be in a coffee shop and just hang and do life with people. And I said, well, are you going to have a job on the side? And he's like, no, that's going to be my job. That's why I'm asking you for money. And I was like, no, no, no. I said, guess what? If you show people that you're dedicated enough to have a job while doing this ministry, I think that you will see blessings multiply because people will say, I want to get behind that. I see how hard he's working rather than they're just sitting on a couch and having coffee all the time. I mean, who doesn't want to do that, right? So anyways, I just love your story. I love how much dedication you have to the debt-free journey. And so you've done some incredible things with your life, as I mentioned in the beginning. What advice would you give someone who wants to make a commitment to do something really hard, like PT school or being debt-free or cycling across the USA? They all have something in common. What is that? And how would you speak to that person?
Great question. And definitely the question that I ask myself all the time, because if I want to, first of all, convince myself that I can do something or convince someone else, there's a lot of kind of calculation that goes on in my head of, okay, what's this person thinking? What are their barriers to deciding that they are going to try something, believing that they can do it, and making a plan to actually carry it out? And those are questions that I think a lot of people ask, and there may not be perfect answers for. But for me personally, first of all, it's the decision. And it's really just the small decision to believe that it's possible. I think that you don't always have to have a plan for how it's going to all work out. But I think the Lord really asks us to make, like, sometimes he asks us to make really big decisions, but sometimes they're really small. You know, for me, it's the decision to cook for a night instead of eat out. It's the decision to drive a little further to go to a grocery store that has cheaper groceries, or just eat the same meal 5 days a week instead of, you know, go for something that has more variety, just because that's what works well for my life. So I think that habits can change a life. And I think that if somebody wants to figure out how to accomplish something, if they can break it down into something that they can integrate into, say, 5 of the 7 days in their week, they're going to get somewhere. Because the reality is that when you take a little step and 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 a little step, like, you look back and you're somewhere, you know? And that was definitely something that cycling across America taught me, was that you would end the day exhausted. You'd crawl into bed and you'd think, I cannot climb on a bike tomorrow. There's absolutely no way. And then you wake up and you still think, I cannot climb on a bike today. There's absolutely no way. And you get on a bike and you say, okay, I can go 2 miles. And you end up at 2 miles and you think, okay, I can go 10 more. You're like, okay, I can make it to lunch. And then by the end of the day, you're at your new destination and the whole thing happens again. And it doesn't necessarily get easier. You know, there are times where it's just, you're piling on.
Sounds really painful to me.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great, like, example of just the physical side of habits, you know, being painful. But really, if you just take little steps in the same direction, you're going to make it. When we were riding through Kansas, or we had just crossed the border into Colorado, and we passed people who were walking across America. And I, you know, at that moment, you're just completely humbled. You're like, all right, I thought I was going slow. These people are dedicated. But the reality is that they just walked a little bit and a little bit and a little bit every single day. Mm. So I think the answer is to put something into your day that makes you go in that direction. I think if you looked at your day and looked at your habits and looked at the rituals that you go through, everything that's included, maybe 80% of all of your days, those are the things that you're going to change in.
Amen. Oh, that's great. And I love the quote, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And no one thinks that they can fit an elephant in their belly, but maybe over 72 days, you know, you can bike ride across America or not. I probably won't, but I love that you do it. And that's,
but you could.
I could.
Yeah, there you go.
I should go with that confidence, being like, I could. I'm just choosing not to. But tell us a few of your daily habits that you think, and maybe at what age did you realize habits mattered? And what are some of your daily habits, and kind of how have they formed you over the years?
I don't know if I have a longstanding memory of habits that I had when I was younger, but I do, Well, I'll start with my most recent habit. Let's start with the most recent. I just started drinking like half of my Nalgene every morning right when I wake up, which is a new thing for me. I usually would get up, eat breakfast, get to the gym, and by the time I'm at the gym, then I start drinking water. And that's just been kind of a quick win for the day. You know, I get some water in me, and it's just the first thing that I do when I get up. I have my water bottle that I make sure I fill up before I go upstairs to bed, and then it's ready for me. So I have no trouble making the decision to fill it up before I leave, so on and so forth. I can't say that. I think my habits really reflect the season of life that I'm in more than anything else. I would like to really have a great habit of spending time with the Lord, but that has absolutely been something that I've not been good at lately. And I think that everyone goes through times like that, but I think that I go through phases where I kind of overview kind of what we were just talking about. I zoom out and I say, okay, what do I want my life to be about, or what do I want to develop in my life? So for example, exercise is a really important thing for me to do, not every day, but you know, I guess for me right now, exercise is a lot more about waking myself up and getting my brain going than it is about being really fit or doing something special. So I try to go to the gym every morning before school, and it's not for long and it's never anything crazy, but I just going and getting moving in the morning is a big deal to kind of set my day up for success. And I try to make a habit of riding my bike to school instead of driving. And that's something that kind of gets me outside, where I don't get to spend much of my day outside because I'm in class. So that gets me outside and kind of in touch with the environment and the elements, and, you know, really appreciating how cold it is and stuff. So I think, I don't know if this answers your question, but I like to have a direction for my habits, and I like to have a reason for them and a benefit for them.
I love that. I think that the water thing kind of makes a lot of sense with what I've learned about you. Is what you're trying to do this year also is to cut back on caffeine, or cut it out for the beginning part of the year. And do you feel like that has kind of given you a little bit of a boost that the coffee would? And do you think that, what was your reasoning behind that? And what does that look like for you to give up caffeine? And yeah.
I usually drink like a cup or two of coffee every day. And I just wasn't really like happy with how my energy levels were fluctuating throughout the day. And there's this awesome product. Nobody is paying anybody to say this, but it's called Dandy Blend. And it's this like dandelion root coffee like powder almost. You can find it on Amazon. But it tastes just like coffee. It's the only coffee substitute I've ever found. So I have gone last year I did this. I just kind of cut back on caffeine and replaced it with that. And it worked really well. So I don't know if the water is necessarily related to that habit, but I just decided to kind of cut it out to see if I could maintain my energy levels a little bit more. And also I know that like often a problem with feeling hungry or feeling like, you know, craving something is really, you're just dehydrated. So I don't know. I thought it was a good start to my day. So I tried it.
That's awesome. So you grew up homeschooled and you have three siblings. And, I would say by just the families that I've known that have kind of gone through, the homeschool route, that they're some of the most incredible human beings I've ever met. I mean, I nannied for a family of four, two boys, two girls, just like your family. And they were my first kind of encounter with homeschooling, and just gained so much respect for it. And then my husband was homeschooled, and he's one of five, and there's kind of a trend there. There's usually larger families that homeschool. I just have seen how brilliant he is, how in touch with, current situations in the world.
Like events?
Current events. Thank you. Current situation. So he's really in touch with like current, events. He's into politics. I mean, he's just such a well-rounded human being. And I really attribute a lot of that, plus just the amazing scores he got before college and how well he did in college, to homeschooling. So what would you say was kind of, what would this contribute to your discipline and habits, the genesis of it, and what did homeschooling look like for you? And is it something that you want to carry on with your family?
I think that's a good connection that you made. I think that homeschooling for me really did form a lot of those habits or the idea that I could form my own habits, because it gave me the power over my own schedule in a way that, you know, maybe other schooling wouldn't have done for me. And I think that homeschooling is for the right kid for the right time. And for me, it happened to be right for me, and it happened to be right for me to be homeschooled all the way through. And that's not the case for other kids, and that's great. But I really benefited from having the power to create my own schedule. And I also got to see what happened when I, like, say, for example, if I had a day's schoolwork to do and I got it done before lunch, it was like this whole world opened up to me, and I could do whatever I wanted in the afternoon and explore whatever I wanted. And then as I got older, take all the babysitting jobs that all the other kids couldn't get because they were in school. So for me, it was great. It was just what I needed. And I think it was good for my siblings as well. But yeah, I think it did play into me seeing that I could control things about my schedule and command time to work like I wanted it to.
That's really neat. And would you, when you have a family, would you consider homeschooling them?
I would definitely consider it. You know, hopefully that would be a decision that my future husband and I would make together. But I think that I would love to homeschool, at least for a time, if nothing else, to just see the wonder of a kid learning new stuff. And I love to kind of play a teaching role, you know, with people. And that is one reason that I love physical therapy, because there's so much education involved. But just watching a kid's eyes light up when they like see a ladybug for the first time, or I mean, you're seeing that now with Bear. He's starting to explore all of these things and be really cognizant and attuned to the differences between things and so on and so forth. And that's only going to grow. And I don't know, I think it's really cool that parents who have the opportunity to homeschool could really just watch their kid blossom into that. So I hope that I get to experience that.
That is awesome. So what is your why? The thing that drives you when life gets tough? It's a choice, a mentality. What is your kind of driving thing, the thing that keeps you up at night, and so on and so forth?
Oh, part of that is personality. Part of that is just that sometimes I can't help but keep driving, you know, and I really need people in my life to rein me back and say, it's okay to not drive. So on the one hand, it's just part of me, I think, to keep pushing. And that's not always a good thing. So I definitely need it checked. On the other hand, I think that, you know, like we were talking about with the purpose statement of this idea of liberating greatness, I think it could be kind of because those were things that people spoke into me when I was younger, when I was growing up. And I think that probably keeps launching me towards, you know, trying to find the spot where my passions and my skills kind of intersect in this place that serves people. But also, I think that there's something really beautiful about being at this like intellectual zenith of, you know, the best place where your brain, your talents, your hands are used, you know, and that looks different for every single person. And so I think everyone has this sort of longing to be challenged in a way that, you know, maybe they're not super attuned to it, but I think it's there. So I think that kind of drive towards the right level of challenge is always kind of there and pushing me.
I like that. So for someone who may be a little bit more intimidated, there's someone that's listening that's like, I am not naturally like that. For me, that's actually me. It's, I could definitely, I call it, I'm very self-accommodating. So when I'm tired, I sleep. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm thirsty, I drink. When I don't want to go out, I don't go out. Like, I don't really push myself all that often to make hard decisions. So someone who maybe it doesn't come naturally to be disciplined and responsible. Like I've always been responsible, but just taking action towards those big dreams. I'm a dreamer. So I think that there's people in life that dream and they talk about their dreams and then everyone's like, rah, rah. But then they're like, when are you actually going to execute? And then there's people that just head down and they're executing. That's you. That's Blake. I always say that the two of you are so alike. Blake will just not stop going. Like he will not stop until I say, okay, you need to stop now. Like you have a full-time job. You have an amazing position at your current company and you are also, just so involved with real estate projects and this, and you're a dad. And I mean, and he does it all with excellence, just like you do. And so, but for someone who feels a little more intimidated by, the drive and the discipline and the goal setting type stuff, what would you kind of say to them?
I would say a couple of things. First of all, know that people like me and Blake need people like you. And it's, if we kept going and going and driving, we would never look up and see the sky. We would never sit back and say, wow, Lord, look at this creation that you've made. Look at this, you know, family that you've given me. We just would keep going and going. So on the one hand, there's not necessarily an inherent reason for you to try to push out of that. You and others like you are such good listeners, such valuable people to see a need in a personality, to see an opportunity to share provision with someone, share abundance with someone who's living in that driving mode. And we talked about this the other day, how one day I came home and I just automatically started doing the dishes and going. And you were like, Rebecca, sit down. And I was like, no, it's fine. You're like, no. I see it in your eyes. Come over here and take a seat. And you made me rest. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, you know, the world doesn't need people like you to become drivers, you know, and become people who keep putting their head into the ground. Mm-hmm. So on that note, like, just keep being who you are, mm-hmm. you know, because you're needed and you're valuable. But at the same time, we're all asked in ways to be obedient to certain things that the Spirit puts in us. For me, most of the time that's towards doing less and resting. And for you, sometimes it's getting out of the house. Sometimes it's doing an errand that you maybe don't feel like doing right at the moment. So I think it's a lot about listening and, you know, you talked about, you know, what to say to the person who wants to make a change or wants to push towards a goal or something like that. You'll do it when you want to. Mm. You know, if you're not doing it or making strides to do it, you just don't want it enough. Mm. And so either the Lord will put that vision inside of you and you'll realize that it's a matter of obedience, or you'll just like grow in your desire to do it. And maybe that takes you pushing yourself or asking other people to pull you into uncomfortable zones. Or maybe you just realize that you start to want that more than something else. And so you start listening to some people who are drivers and learning from them and getting tips from them about how to put habits into your life to get you there. But that it takes time and it's totally fine.
I love that. I think that you hit the nail on the head with the part about accountability. I think that we all need accountability, whether we're drivers and we need to rest more, or we tend to lack in drive and then we need someone to come alongside and push us. I think that surrounding ourselves with community of people that are different than us, that will call us out, that will speak truth over our lives. I mean, there's nothing more valuable than that. I would truly say if I got some kind of award for anything I've done in my life, I would say it's because of my team. I would say it's because my husband is my number one fan. Like, truly, like, I don't know, like, maybe everyone thinks this about their best friend or their significant other or their mom, but I've never felt more pumped up by a human being than him. He just believes in me. And it's not this like, oh, rah, rah, I believe in you. He's like, no, Lex, like, you don't even see what you're capable of, but I do. And you're going to run and you're going to run far and you're going to run fast and you're going to make a big impact. And because of that, I think that that belief that someone else has in me gives me the faith that I don't even have in myself. And so I think that that's really valuable. And I also think that you hit it on the head with the whole people will do it in their time. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that. I'm an Enneagram 8, and I've talked about that before on the podcast. And I'm very much the person that wants to see people living out their potential. So I do really well with people like you and Blake because you're already running and you're already doing so well. And I get to just encourage that and then help slow you down. Whereas usually I'm having conversations with people and I'm actually having the opposite conversation and I'm saying, you know, you really should try this, or have you thought about launching this product into Etsy? And it's so frustrating when I have given what I feel like is my heart and soul, because I love encouraging people. My two-word purpose statement is encouraging passion or encouraging purpose or inspiring purpose, one of those combinations, but basically helping people to know their purpose and know that they're infinitely valuable. And that's why I have this podcast. And so for me, it's so hard to watch when people aren't ready for something. And so I'm learning. I think that this year, I think one of my big things for the way that I love others and accept others is being less critical and less judgmental and really just loving them for where they're at, like Jesus would have me do, but it's really hard.
It is. And you know, I think you really got it there, because the more that I talk to people and the older I get, the more I realize that my one-time conversation with them is not going to change them. And I mistakenly think of myself as a person who has the, you know, power to change somebody in a moment or with a certain word or message. But I don't know, the more and more I think about it and talk to people, the more I think that's not true. I guess ascribe more to the thought that, like, if somebody's not ready for change, every piece of education that they have, every conversation that they have is kind of a drop in the bucket towards them starting to think over for themselves that they're ready for change. And until they make that decision, they're probably not going to do something that lasts. But and the power is inside of them. And, you know, maybe the Holy Spirit is moving there and dropping into the bucket. Maybe it's people around them. Maybe it's education that they learn from themselves. And sometimes it's just not enough. But I think the best thing that we can do for those people and that people can do for us is to not be judgmental, because that's almost just like dumping the bucket upside down again. And I've definitely been convicted a lot lately of trying to change instead of just trying to listen and be like, okay, the reason that maybe you're not ready for change yet is because, you know, something's happened in the past where you're not trusting yourself to make that choice or moving forward. So I think you're right. It takes a lot of listening and patience and, you know, even when we're talking about, you know, for ourselves, change just takes time.
And I love that about you. You're really, really, and I said it in the beginning, but you're really gracious towards people. And I think you're really patient. And I think that you're a testament to that, because I feel like I've grown just by osmosis of being around you. And you mentioned something about with generosity, because we did that retreat and you said, maybe this retreat could be cool, but what I learn about generosity is by being around you and living with you. And absolutely. I think that that's where relationships form, and that's where trust forms, and that's where time is really what kind of gets us to the finish line, because and sometimes I'm a very impatient person, not sometimes, always. And so it's hard for me to give. I love the relationship aspect. I love building trust with people, but I don't like that it takes a lot of time. I'm like, just trust me already. I know what's best for you. But kind of shifting from that relationship element, you do something every Thursday night with your time, and it's caring for refugees in our community in Chattanooga, and you're helping them just kind of accumulate to the society here in Chattanooga. From some of these people are from South Sudan, and some of them are from other areas where they speak very little English, and they've got kids and they're in a new place. And so tell us a little bit about that adventure, how you fell in love with it, what it's taught you, and what you love about this organization.
Yeah, I mean, if you knew them, you would love them too. They're fantastic people, and it is an honor that I get to spend a couple hours every week with them. And, you know, I wish that I could say that I freely, without thought of school or my to-do list, go hang out with them. But sometimes it's just a matter of pushing myself out the door. It's not always as clean as that. But it's Nations is really just about noticing the people around us and paying attention to the fact that people everywhere have needs, and these people specifically just have needs that we can help them with. You know, anybody who speaks English can help people learn English. And so it's really just a matter of using that as a tool to build relationships with them and make people who stereotypically are outsiders feel like they are loved and valued in the community. And so, yeah, it's a time that I love and a place that I really love plugging into. So yeah, it's a great group of people.
That's awesome. So you are a very confident person, and you know yourself, you know your strengths, you know your weaknesses, you know your limits. And so when someone else is not as confident, maybe you have a woman who is a friend of yours who kind of lacks in confidence, how do you encourage her? Why do you think that women have such a hard time talking about their strengths? And what do you think the appropriate way to kind of own who we are in Christ as women?
That's a really good question. I think that we have a lot of difficulty talking about it because we are afraid of the expectations that come around if we claim a certain strength.
Hmm.
You know, if I say, oh, well, I'm really good at physical therapy, then you're going to expect that I can deliver some goods in physical therapy. And so I don't know if we like having such a standard set. So it's part of that, and it's part of just being comfortable with failure. You know, if I know that my identity is with Christ and not with my physical therapy skills or my, you know, ability to work hard or do habits, then I can fail and it be okay. And I'm really bad at failing. Like, I don't handle it well. It just doesn't go well. And so, you know, I'm growing in that all the time, but I think it takes just breathing, saying, and being very vocal and honest with yourself about who you are, having other people around you who can speak into you, and just returning to the story of the Bible being that of a God who pursues us and who comes to us when we have done nothing right. You know, that's the whole Bible as an arc, you know, the Israelites continually turning away. And God being like, all right, I'm giving you another chance. And that's, I mean, we are the prodigal son at all times. And so, yeah, confidence is something that I think is healthy. Confidence is a byproduct of being together with Jesus. And that's not a switch that gets flipped. That's not an overnight thing. That healthy confidence is not something that I always have. You know, a lot of times I put up a front of confidence to as a survival mechanism. And so it kind of takes that tearing down process and that building up process to really get anywhere. And it takes time, it takes patience, and it really just takes the Lord healing you more than anything else.
That's really beautiful. So you help a lot of friends by helping them know their worth financially, whether they're a small business or someone pet sitting. Where does your worth come from? I mean, it's probably playing on some of what you just talked about, but why do you think it's important for women to know their worth financially?
That's a good question. And it definitely plays on what we were just talking about. And I don't think that somebody's financial worth indicates their value, but I think it is a really interesting commentary on how they value their time.
Hmm.
Because if you're working a job, and most of my friends are in this place where the amount of time that they put into their work correlates with the amount of income that they have. So I think that, you know, one of two things will happen if you're underpaid. Either one, you will realize that the work that you're being underpaid for is your passion, and you'll stick with it and you'll have a great time doing it. But you won't be able to pay your bills potentially, and then you'll have to go get another job during the other hours of the day and just be really tired, you know? And maybe that's a sacrifice that you're being called to make, and that's where you are, and that's beautiful and that's great. On the other hand, if you are underpaid, you will have to work so many more hours to pay your bills that you won't have time for the projects that you're passionate about, the people that you're passionate about serving. Somebody recently told me, survival is the antithesis of intentionality. Hmm. So if you are in survival mode, it's really difficult to listen to the people around you, to serve the people around you. And so, yes, there's a time for survival. And I think there's a time that we all go through. And I kind of feel like that pretty often in a really chronic survival mode sometimes, of going through grad school, but everybody has that time, but I don't think it should be sustained for a long time. And if it's your job that is causing that, then I think it's really worth thinking about, you know, is this the place I'm supposed to be? If so, is this a sustainable place? Is the Lord telling me to be here? Or is my time worth more than this? Because if the Lord's put a vision inside my heart to put in time somewhere else into a project or into a people, then I can't stay at this job or I need to get paid more. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a confidence in the vision that the Lord puts in you that makes you reflect on how you're being paid. So when my friends, you know, are underpaid for a pet sitting gig, I'm like, listen, you need to be paid more because otherwise, like, you're gonna be behind in your time reserve, you know, and then look at all these places that you keep telling me that you're passionate about. So, you know, if it's fair wage for your value, then you should be demanding it. And so I think that it's helpful to reflect on that on occasion and really make sure that you're being compensated for, you know, what your time is worth.
I love that. I love how much you value time. It's kind of a current theme, or not a current theme, but a theme throughout your life. And it's been a theme throughout even our talk on this podcast. And with that comes one of my favorite things about one of your disciplines, which is taking a Sabbath every Saturday. So on Saturday, the whole day is a day of rest, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you just sleep all day. it just means that you don't do labor-like things. You've chosen not to do schoolwork. You've talked about even laundry. If it feels restful, you'll do it. If it doesn't feel restful, you don't do it. Sometimes you make meals with friends. You spend time with community, maybe go to a coffee shop. So I think that some people have this idea about Sabbath and what it means in a legalistic way. Tell us the kind of the liberating greatness part of Sabbath and what you love about it. What was the genesis of it and how it served you?
Well, you know, it's really interesting that we just talked, like you were just commenting on how much I pay attention to time and care about time. And it's a commodity that like does not exist in the kingdom, which is a really interesting concept to be so concerned about. You know, like it is good that we think about how to be productive, but at the same time, it's interesting that the Lord doesn't use like work within those confines at all. So Sabbath is a really interesting flip of our attention to time to basically say, I am going to take a day and live outside of time and not ascribe to my schedule, my to-do list, something like all the things that I feel are necessary to accomplish and take a step and a breath into this economy of time that the Lord designed, aka no time, and just kind of sit in it for a minute. So it's real. I love having the Sabbath because it pulls me out of this almost obsession with time management that is almost necessary at this point, and breathe and say, okay, wait a second. Habits should not be my idol. Time management should not be my idol. Productivity should not be my idol. I first learned about the idea of practicing Sabbath as a believer from somebody who wrote a book. It's called The Rest of God. It's by Mark Buchanan, one of my favorite books of all time. Highly recommend it. And in it, he talks about this ancient idea of Sabbath that the Lord instilled in the Israelites with the Ten Commandments. And that the purpose of it was to give them a day of rest because they were, well, one of the first mentions of this gift of rest was like when he sent the manna for the first time and he told them, you don't have to collect it on Saturday. That's your day to rest. So collect double on Friday, cook in advance, don't do anything. And so I think that what he gave the Israelites was this invitation into blessing. And of course it was much more, it was the law then, you know, the law of the covenant that they were under then. But at the same time, it was this invitation into this very freeing sort of an opportunity where they didn't have to work. And that's just a really beautiful concept in our time. So in this book, what the author writes is he organized his Sabbath around this idea of, instead of making all these rules about this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, which kind of feels binding sometimes, he just says, I'm going to cease from what is necessary and embrace that which gives life. So that's kind of the phrase that I use to dictate my Saturdays is, okay, if it feels necessary and like it's something that I have to do, I'm just going to let it go. I'm not going to do it. But if it's something that brings me a lot of life and joy, then by golly, bring it in. Let's go. And so it really creates this like fun and spontaneous day where I don't really know where it's going to go. I'm going to sleep in as late as I want. And I don't set an alarm. I just kind of wake up and see what's going on and then join where I want to join and stay out of where I want to stay out of. So it has been a really cool journey to see how entering into that blessing has not only been a day where I get to kind of reset, but at the same time, the Lord has worked in his, you know, time-free kingdom and has actually made my other days so much more productive, which blew my mind when I first started doing this. I thought there's absolutely no way I can pack in 7 days of studying or working into six, but he's just like totally twisted my whole week and he's just blown up my productivity on the other days and allowed me this really free Saturday. And I think that he just does that for people because he loves them. And I think it's really an amazing thing when we get to take a command in the Bible or an opportunity to be obedient and just experience the grace and the love that he gives us for following it.
Yeah. I think that it truly is an act of obedience and God always blesses our obedience. And I love that you are really free with your Sabbath. Like you said, if you want to jump on board, you jump on board. If you just want to hang, you hang. And I really have been inspired, and Blake and I have decided to do a Sabbath this year.
Yes.
And just no work. And it's family day and we can meal prep. We can do fun things as a family, and we can invite people along the ride with us to enjoy the Sabbath. But as people that do real estate investing, it feels, and we are also in hospitality, we do Airbnb, so it feels like a 7 day a week kind of job, but I think that's a choice. And for us, it is an act of obedience, and I feel like it's much needed as we prepare for baby number two. Our kids are going to be 18 months apart, so I'm setting up
all the rest day you can get.
Yeah, I'm setting up my the beginning of this year to hopefully reflect the latter of this last 6 months of this year. And I think I'm really excited about that because I have this theory that kids do not create new bad habits. I think they amplify your old bad habits. And so for me, like the whole not brushing my teeth, not getting ready during the day has nothing to do with Bear. It had to do with something that I wasn't even doing well before, and it just got amplified. So instead of maybe waiting half the day to brush my teeth, it's like, oh, now I'm waiting till like Blake is about to get home to brush my teeth. So just those little things. And I think as parents, we can often just fall into those bad habits. And so yeah, I'm really excited about Sabbath, and I've loved just watching, like exactly like you said, it's just a day of just kind of freedom. And I have seen it done in some legalistic ways that's kind of kept me from wanting to adopt it. And so I'm really thankful for you for really mirroring or, modeling it well. I'm pregnant. I'm at a loss for words. Okay. So as we wrap up, just a question for you. I guess a double question is, what inspires you? And then who have some of your mentors have some of your mentors been? So what are those things that inspire you in life? And then who have been the people that have kind of, just poured out wisdom on you?
As far as people who inspire me, first of all, anyone who does something that I'm like, whoa, I never even knew that a human could do that. That's kind of the first group. And people who just decide to get things done. Like I just appreciate those people who are action-oriented people, as well as dreamers. You know, I think dreamers are action-oriented too in ways. And also another person who's just really inspired me a lot lately has been my mom, who has, she's just recovered so from so much, like hurt that's been given to her by people, and to watch her choose forgiveness, and choose to be joyful through it has been something that I have had my eyes just absolutely opened to. And I want to be like that for sure. Mentors for me have been both informal and formal over the years, and it's really just kind of taken whatever form has, you know, the season has lent itself to. So I've had a couple of great mentors in college. And then everybody that I've ever lived with, I've lived with three great families, yours included, and watching people live day to day is just about the greatest like mentoring gift that you could ever receive. You know, to see people when they are having bad days and good days is a gift that really has taught me how to follow Jesus, not just by watching people a couple of days a week where everyone shows up in nice clothes. Mm. And those experiences have absolutely changed my life. So thank you guys for the example that you've given to me. And yeah, so I would say that's it.
Yeah, we love having you, obviously. And for me, I've actually considered on the other end of this, not someone who's necessarily lived with a family before, but just on the other end of someone who has, we've just decided that at the beginning of our marriage, we're opening our home to people, and God just kind of plops them in the right time. It's neat how, like you with your debt-free decision and your cycling across America decision, like when you make a decision, God just makes the provision for it. So and so some people have asked me, if I were to write a book, what would it be about? And I always do not know, which is interesting because I have so many things I'm passionate about, right? So, but the latest and greatest thought is about communal living because I think everyone should do it. I think everyone should be a recipient of it. And the church is big enough where it should be a thing where someone is able to, in college, live for free.
Yes.
Or in a season of need, live for free, or a single mom, or, you know, you name it. There's so many opportunities for the need. But then as Christ followers that have 3, 4, 5 bedroom homes, we've got to start opening our doors. And I'm very passionate about it. And I will tell you all the benefits about it because it is not just I think that this is generosity in general, but generosity just has this way of really blessing our souls. And when we don't step into it, we are missing God's best. And I think that opening your doors when you have the ability to do so is, if I was God, I would say it was a commandment, but I'm not. So thank goodness for that. But I've just been so blessed by, we've had many people in the past 2.5 years of our marriage live with us, and it's just been really, really neat and really encouraging. So, thank you for being an inspiration for the book that I haven't written or may never write, but
you will one day. I'm sure. Yeah. And as a recipient, I can echo completely all of those things.
It's an incredible ride. So, well, Bex, thank you so much for being willing to pour out your joy, wisdom, and just amazing, outlook on life. It's just so refreshing, and I cannot wait for you to be released from grad school. Like, you are just like a caged tiger that's about to just like go crazy on the world. And I just can't believe that just in this season, we get to spend it with you. And I know that one day I'm going to be like, there she goes. So anyways, well, ladies, you are infinitely valuable. You were created with a set of gifts, skills, and talents that you have and only you have. God created you. He made you. He loves you. And so open your arms to Him, spend a little time with Him, and let Him speak to your heart. Get it, girl. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. If this message has encouraged you, then please click to subscribe and share with a friend who may be inspired by the message. Also, if you have an event coming up and you're looking for a speaker, click the link below to get in touch with me.